Welcome to the See You Next Summer podcast. I'm your host, Billy Polyhan, and with me, as always, is the Therese to my Carol, Mr. Raul Rodriguez, and we are joined by a very special guest, one of my favorite people in the world. You might know her from Geeks of Color or First Cut or just on the Schmodown Entertainment Network, Miss Sabrina Ramirez. How you guys doing?
How you doing,
I'm
Sabrina?
Doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me to talk about this film that I openly enjoy all the time and have rewatched a million times. So I'm very excited.
That's pretty cool. And also, as me, as always, Raul Rodriguez and also Sabrina Ramirez. That's the the Mexican way to say it.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, also, this is my first time watching this movie. I've heard about it before. So I think also it's Billy's first time seeing Carol, but this was a really good movie. I was really surprised of it, especially the score was pretty good.
Yeah, I was about to say the score in this movie is top notch. I mean, there's a lot of this movie that's top notch. Shocker. It's almost like I pick critically acclaimed movies on purpose. Swear to God, guys, when we get to the Rogue One episode, you're going to want to tune in for that one. Just. Trust me on that. Raul has some thoughts.
Ooh,
that piece of garbage.
Enticing.
So yeah, before we do the recap, I just wanted to ask Sabrina, how did you get introduced to this movie? And do you remember the first time you ever watched it?
Yeah, I saw this movie in theaters. So back in 2014 when it was released, it was something that was completely on my radar because I had read the book. The book was republished with the same title, Carol, but I believe the original title was The Price of Salt. So really, really great novel. This was on my radar 100%. So I definitely rushed out into the theaters the second it was released. Plus, Cate Blanchett, I'll see anything that Cate Blanchett is in.
No, the performance of Cate Blanchett is amazing. The way I even put it on my nose, she has some fuck me eyes throughout the whole movie. Yes. She looks hot. And she's she's just undressing Rooney Mara since the first minute that they interact. And I'm like, okay, this is getting steamy. And then we will get to that scene. But yeah, this was a really also a beautiful romance, in a pretty classy way. Also talking about connections, because Carter Burwell, I think that's the composer, is the same composer as Twilight. So
yes.
Talking about romances.
I love that you mentioned that about Cate Blanchett's performance, because the entire time she was perfectly cast into this role. I can't think of any actress that can bring out this this energetic connection with just her eyes, kind of like what you mentioned. Even the way she speaks, it's soft, it's low, it's slow, and all of that just is so subtle. And I think that's what makes Carol, because in the novel, she's actually not at the forefront the way that she is in this film. There's definitely a few scenes that are added that I think are super beneficial to the actual film, because when you're adapting something, it is so important to get all those different perspectives. So before we get to the thing, but even the scene when they're sitting at the round table and they're kind of talking about the rights, the court rights and the visitation rights for the daughter, that was all completely just made for the film, which I find to be so fascinating, because we get so many different facets of Carol's character that we might have not gotten if that scene hadn't been in the film.
That's a pretty cool perspective.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. So we begin with, first of all, the score, once again, probably my favorite part of the movie. And we get various shots of New York in the 1950s. And we enter this really classy restaurant. And you can just tell the production is great. I believe they actually did shoot in New York. And we see this guy, Jack. He enters the restaurant and we see, from the table across, we see Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara just having dinner. And then he goes, Therese, is that you? And then we don't see what the conversation they were having was. We do later in the movie. But it just catches Therese off guard. And she's just like, oh, yeah, this is a friend I knew in college. And this is Carol Aird. how do you do? How do you do? And it's one of those awkward encounters, like meeting somebody for the first time. And I just went, yes, I relate to that so much.
Yeah. And then we see that Rooney Mara's character, her name, she has kind of like an Audrey Hepburn kind of look. I really like that. Especially as we see her working at a mall called Frankenberg's, that she sells like some really nice kind of like dolls. And then as we see that Carol walks in a really beautiful coat that she's wearing, and then she's looking for a bright Betsy doll. And it was like, Rooney Mara's character was like, oh, yes, the one that cries and pees herself. But we already sold out of that one. And then Carol asked, was like, what is the thing that you like when you were 4 years old? She's like, well, I like trains. Like, there's kind of like this train set that is pretty limited and you can get it. She's like, well, it sounds pretty good. And I was like, especially it has 3-day shipping. Carol's like, well sold. And I was like, are you going to charge me for it? And Rima's like, you can put out the address here. And I was like, I love the way that she's also so classy, but she's seducing her so fast.
Yeah, because there's a notable age difference between the two. And did that bother you guys at all? Or were you just like, nah, it's fine?
No, it's fine.
No, I think it really does add to it because Carol is somebody who is so comfortable with herself. You know, obviously in this time period, she did have to hide this from the world, but she's not afraid to openly flirt with somebody like that and just like see what it receives versus Therese, who is definitely very shy, giddy, like a schoolgirl, because we don't know if she's necessarily getting these feelings for the first time, but this is the first time that we're seeing her go through this. And she's definitely, like Raul was saying, but like stumbling and kind of like drifting off into a little bit, because you could see her mind is kind of clouded by this like seduction that Cate Blanchett is bringing to the role.
Nice. And then after that, we get, another flashback inside of a flashback. We meet Therese's boyfriend, Richard, who is just kind of a wet blanket, honestly. He doesn't really add much except just to bitch and moan about, when are we going to Paris? Because it's always Paris. It's just. That's the cliche, and they go with it. And Rooney Mara is just like Therese is just so, what's the word? Ambivalent, I would say. It's just like, yeah, okay, sure. It's just very, what's the word? Apathetic, really, to just this whole thing. And
yeah, there was more passion. We could see like the difference between when she's talking to Carol and the energy and passion she has just in that simple conversation in a department store versus a genuine should be romantic conversation with your boyfriend talking about a trip to France. That polarizing, like to see the difference of those front and center back and forth is definitely a shift. And with like Therese, she has like no personality with him. It's exactly what you said. She's very, very apathetic. You could tell she's just a little bit disinterested and she's kind of going through the motions.
Yeah. I mean, even when she's at the bar with friends and stuff, she's very reserved, very quiet, doesn't really say much. But we do find out that she wants to be a photographer. And one of her friends fixed her camera, and it was one of those old cameras where you had actual film in it. I would love to own one of those because I feel like that would be just like the coolest aesthetic. And we also saw in the previous scene that Carol accidentally left her gloves on the counter, and that is why Therese finds out where she lives because of the because they shipped the train from the department store to that address. She learned where that address was and shipped the gloves as well. And then I believe this is where we meet Coach Taylor himself, Kyle Chandler, and their little girl, who is just, she's the cute little girl, little Rindy. I was just like, yeah, I would want to, I would want that little girl as my daughter as well, because she's not like a bratty kid, like the kid from A League of Their Own or shit like that. It's just, she's happy with her daughter, but very, very clearly tense with Kyle Chandler. And yeah, what did you guys think of Harge?
That's a weird name, though, for a character. I have never heard that name before. You can see that he's really harsh. Yeah, but I also did pretty interesting about their dynamic, especially the thing that we know later, that he already knew Carol's secret, and he's still, like, playing it cool, because especially for the 50s, other men in real life, they would have get rid of her immediately or try to kill her because of that. And it's pretty interesting the thing that how he's playing the game too. That's the thing that it was interesting about his character. But also I really like the commitment of Therese as an employee. She's like, but did she already got the train? She's like, she's a committed, also because she likes Carol, but she also as a customer, she wanted her to be satisfied to get the train and the gloves. And then, of course, Carol calls in into the company. I was like, hey, you want to go to lunch? And I also love the thing that you said about how she gets so nervous that even Carol immediately, without seeing the menu, oh, I just want a soup and I want a dry martini. And she was like, I want the same. Like, immediately, like, she's so entrapped by her. And it's really, really seductive. It's really sexy.
And I like that you guys mentioned about like Harge and we're just talking about Richard, the difference between their interactions with their partners at the time with Carol and Harge and then Therese and Richard. Harge knows obviously that this has happened in Carol's past, but I think he just like loves her so much. He's kind of this voice of that era of time where he's like choosing to turn a blind eye almost rather than kind of confront something that would make Carol happy to be able to live free truly as herself. He'd rather just have her and have her put this portion of her life away. And it's just kind of ridiculous at that point. But then we have like Richard, who is basically just kind a little bit dumb. He's not oblivious. And he's like, oh, you have a little crush. But he doesn't have the same kind of response that Harge does. He's letting her go off on this trip. And he's like, yeah, I guess like whatever. Like he can't stop her. He's just asking her a lot of questions saying like, oh, like what's up with the situation? Are you safe or whatever? And I feel like at that point you could even notice that like Richard really sees that Therese is not that interested in him at this point and hasn't ever really been. And I think that's why he's going all out with planning this trip, planning to propose to her, planning their life together while she's just kind of not into it at all.
Yeah, and I just also love, I always give a shout out to the cinematography and the way the camera moves. There's a lot of close-ups and there's just a lot of scenes of just like silence and where we have those twilight stares where they literally because they have very big expressive eyes, especially Rooney Mara. She's got like these big puppy dog eyes that are just like looking so intensely. And that says so much about their characters. And yeah, it really sucks. But that was the time period. Like we mentioned this again in our Brokeback Mountain episode. If people found out, they would have been killed more than likely. And it's funny. Harge reminds me of Randy Quaid's character where he finds out, but he doesn't do anything despite his better judgment. Except now we see that Harge has it's clearly bothering him. And he says multiple times throughout the movie, you know, I want you. And if I can't have you, big red flag, ladies and or men, just if somebody says that they want you, run. Get the fuck out.
If I can't have you, no one will. You leave immediately. The second you hear those words, no way. But I love that you talked about the close-up shots and like the silence and how it's very like lived in and we're immersed in the same emotions that they have with each other. And I feel like that's why it's so electric because we're feeling it. I feel like I'm in their perspective 100%. And it is so intimate having those kinds of close-ups. And it like you could hear a freaking pin drop from the distance, the way that the silence is so loud at the same time, because we know exactly what they're going through.
Yes, of course. And also, as we also, we know that they're getting divorced and they're like talking during the lunch. But also, as Carol gets out, she gets picked up by Sarah Paulson's character, is called Abby. As also, she's trying she asks about who is that girl. And I was like, what is her purpose? And also, it's kind of like, we're kind of like a living world. We know immediately that Abby is one of the Carol's previous lovers. And so, I love that also, there's kind of like a, the way that also you see, talking about stairs, the way that you see Therese admiring Carol in everything, the way that she drives, the way that she looks at the window. Also, the way that he uses her camera to share out photos to her, and the way also that Carol also is like, okay, I'm going to give you a pose. It was like you said, it's pretty electric. And also, especially, it's like one of the, I don't remember exactly what moment happened, but then it was like a friend of mine told me that I need to be more interested in humans. That also is kind of like acknowledging that maybe also Therese was pretty lonely before meeting Carol. And also, we see that Carol invites Therese to spend the day, to spend a Sunday at her house. And then she's touching the piano, and slowly Carol is just like, oh, you're playing pretty good, and like touching her back. But then moments later, Harsh walks in and was like, hey, how long have you known my wife? And I was like, and she's like, no, I'm sure we met in the mall. I was like, I just sold her that toy for your daughter. She said, everything is fine. But the way that he gets so angry, because in that moment is when we know that Carol has done this before.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you say it like that, Carol sounds very, how do I put this? Very, she likes to... It doesn't sound good, just like on paper. It's much better in the actual movie, because there is really one of the few movies where it's just like subtlety works, and you don't need it to be that bombastic. Because if you've seen any like any popular LGBT movie, it's always just this big flamboyant thing, like in a musical, and it's big and extravagant, or like fucking Elvis Las Vegas show. But here, no, it's just very calm, it's very quiet, and it moves at a very casual pace. That's the other thing, is that this movie is 2 hours long, but it's like a slow ride in a car. You just admire the stuff around you, and you appreciate the acting. Top-notch acting from everybody, not just Blanchett and Mara, but also, like, Kyle Chandler, because I love that guy.
I like that you talk about the pacing, because there's so much in this film. It's not just a love story. It's not like we're dealing with something like Call Me By Your Name, where it is just a true 100% romance. We're dealing with all these other themes of like this specific time period, the relationship that she has with her own family, and how her being her true authentic self kind of is stopping her from being able to see her daughter or whatever. Because especially at this time, when we talk about pop culture and film, because I also love that you mentioned that it's not like camp, like this isn't like huge eccentric and like campy or anything like that. If we look at the history of queer cinema, each decade provided something different, but obviously in like the 20s to the 60s, this was obsolete. And that's why this era and this society that we're kind of into with this story, that's why people didn't know how to react to this, because representation is so important. And there was no queer representation in media. Like, it was banned for decades. So people didn't know how to approach this at all. And they see something like this. They see like homosexual behavior, queer behavior as like deviant, as they need to be locked up in a mental institution, because they'd rather throw people aside and take away people's rights rather than learn something that they don't 100% necessarily understand themselves. And that really just comes down to this time period and the fact that there was no representation in media.
Yeah, totally agree. And that's another thing, like you said, it's like also that's why we see the time period, especially here is the 50s, in Bourbon Mountain is the 60s. So it's kind of like telling those queer stories in different eras. And I'm pretty sure maybe in the future we're gonna get a queer story in the 20s or in the 1910s. Or like oh, that movie Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That's also a really cool period piece also as well. Yeah, but then we know that Harsh wants a full custody of the daughter Rindy, because especially because he wants to claim a morality clause, because it's technically saying because Carol is gay, that's why he wants the full custody of her. But also I really like that Harsh is not like kind of like making it like so bombastic, even though he's kind of like an asshole in that moment that he wants the full custody. But he's not like, I'm gonna shame you through the whole public that you're gay or something. He was like, I just want my daughter. And then I see that Abby's with Carol. It was like, is it because of me? I was like, no, it's not, it has nothing to go with you. And so, we see Carol as Therese that they want to go on a road trip. As we see this guy, I think that the guy was, you say it was Richard, was like, but why do you are gonna go with Carol? I was like, do you have a crush on her? You know that she's gonna get tired of you. Like, also he has kind of like his suspicions about Carol. But also as we see that Therese is packing, we also see Carol packing. But also in between one of these shots, we see that in Carol's suitcase, she has a gun.
Yeah, a literal Chekhov's gun in this case. And one of the scenes we actually did skip was that there was a mutual friend of Richard and Therese's named Danny, and he was just like, "Oh, you should come by the studio, get your photos like developed and shit." Yeah, very sketchy, because what happens afterward is definitely a Me Too story, and I was just like, "Shit." It really sucks that like, and she doesn't report it or anything. She's like, she goes like, "I have to go." And he's just like, "Oh, well, will I see you again?" And I'm just like, "No, dipshit. You literally just kissed this girl with the girlfriend of one of your friends, which is bad enough, but then he does it against her will." And that's just, it sucks that that still happens. I mean, it's definitely been frowned upon, and like reporting it has improved, but back then, yeah, if you've seen Mad Men and shit like that, that was all too common. Like
In
it,
that
it's
time
really,
period,
really sad.
I mean, like, women didn't even have access to their own bank accounts until like the 70s or something like that. That's why we didn't see divorces. That's why we didn't see all this kind of stuff that we do now. And that's also the case of like reported sexual harassment and assault. It's finally, we're getting to a point in society in present day where something like this is being addressed and targeted much more. And it's also not a taboo. And the victim, it's less likely that the victim will be blamed for their own things, because you know it's like, oh, your skirt is too short or whatever, or you're probably leading him on and that's why he did this thing. Those are things that people say all throughout decades ago, that are kind of coming to a halt now. So it is definitely something interesting to see on screen, because she can't tell anybody, like, you know, she can't talk about it. It'll be blamed on her regardless in any way. And that really does, being a woman in this society in New York City in this time period is something that we see reflected in all of those moments. Like that one, she thought he was interested like in her art, and maybe he is a tiny bit, but mostly he's interested in hitting on her. And then that's what we get also with the custody battle and everything. It's like the man has more rights and ability to speak their piece and speak their voices, and the women were kind of just expected to stand by. It's even the tiny brief moment we get with the friend smoking a cigarette from Carol, a mutual friend's wife. Like they're all in a group of friends, and she's like, "Oh, my husband will kill me if he catches me smoking." It's different things like that. It's how men dictated women's lives. So I think all those types of moments that we were just talking about are so impactful, because they push across these themes in a way that they're very subtle. They're not completely in your face, but they're very, very impactful. So all of those, and basically every guy in this film is pretty much shitty. And that's very much so intentional when we're kind of talking about this era.
Yeah, and I think that's why Therese has such a big attraction to Carol, because she is very unconventional. You rarely saw that. Maybe like every once in a while you get a Katharine Hepburn where she just wouldn't take any shit from anybody. And you guys should definitely also watch Katharine Hepburn movies because they're incredible. But I really do like just if the time period feels just like so lived in, and yeah, it's crazy to think today that these things happened, but they did. And I mean, it really did feel like you were transported in the 50s. And this is also a great Christmas movie because this movie takes place around Christmas. And it's a Christmas miracle that these two got together at all. And when you say it's just like, oh, I want this random girl, essentially this stranger, I'm going to spend time with her rather than my family. And I might not ever spend time with my husband's family again. I might not like it. But if you're going through a divorce, and a particularly nasty divorce at this time, and like you said, like that was frowned upon. Nobody ever got divorced. That sounds very shitty, but the reason why Carol does it is just because she, much like Therese, also just feels like shackled by society's expectations of her. And it's the only time that they can really, they make each other feel alive, among other things. But yes, really the only exception that I think Carol actually likes about her life is Rindy, her daughter. And I know this because of her monologue at the end of the movie when we get there. And what about you, Raul? Do you want to do that or just continue with recap?
Yeah, we can continue with the recap. It's also they're continuing their road trip. And then as we see, they get into a hotel. They ask for the presidential seat because it had a more attractive rate. As we see them having drinks, they continue the road trip, but then they stop in another hotel, and then it's New Year's, and they start kissing, and I really like the way that they're start kissing, and then she, and then Therese is like, take me to bed, and it, wow, like, this was a really good scene, it was really hot. I had never looked like that before. And then you see Carol says, you're trembling. And there's what I want to see you like that. And I would just put out steamy at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, there's reason. It's very.
I was just going to say, she also broke up with that wet blanket Richard. That's all, yeah. I wanted to say, Sabrina.
Yeah, well, it's very apparent in all these moments, and it kind of goes back to what you mentioned about their age difference. It's not even just necessarily their age, because of course everything is legal. That's why there's no like red flags, but they do have a different power dynamic where Carol is very much so herself unapologetically. And then Therese, she's very, very nervous. And it's implied earlier in the film that she's a virgin, kind of, because she says to Richard that they never went all the way. And it just kind of seems like she hadn't ever in her life. So this was probably her first ever experiencing this like passion, this spark, this joy. And, you know, anybody would be nervous their first time. And it's a very beautiful, sensual, intimate experience. And it's hot in a way that's very, very realistic, because, you know, there's a little bit of like pauses and like, okay, what do we do now? Like awkward moments, but at the same time, it's very fluid. So it's that perfect mixture of capturing what it's really like if someone were to be a virgin and be in this experience with somebody who is much more experienced in that way.
Well, also because they have really good chemistry as well. Especially how you said that it's kind of like we see them kissing, they take pauses, and they even like, especially one of the last lines where they're having their sexy, my angel flung out of space. And I'm like, damn, Carol. I was like, damn, yeah. Well, that's a good line. And then they had sex. I forgot Waterloo, Minneapolis. I forgot the state, but it was a Waterloo. That was the name of the town. Obviously, the next day, Carol gets a telegram. And immediately we see her run into her car, grabs the gun. And they see this random guy that Therese stumbled upon him in one of those road trips that he was like trying helping her getting ice. But this guy was following them and he recorded only the audio. Back then, I think it was only implied that it was only the audio of them having sex, and he already sent it right away. And then I really love how Carol immediately wants to kill him, but he's like, "No, I'm sorry, man, but I already sent it. Like, you're screwed." And I even myself was like, like, I felt that moment so hard because I'm like, everything was going so well. And I totally forgot that Kyle Chandler's character was existing in this moment until I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about him. And we get back to the drama about them and the girl.
Yeah. And also that guy was Corey Michael Smith, whom people from Gotham might know as the Riddler. And yeah, he wiretapped the room, somehow was able to wiretap the room. And yeah, recorded them having sex, which is no, that's, I'm pretty sure that's illegal. I mean,
at this time, women were second class. Yeah. At this time, women were second class citizens. They probably didn't be like seen as having the same rights. This is probably something that could borderline on like, you could have like an argument that this is like almost illegal enough to like straight up like institutionalize either one of them. So at that point, the semi crime that they're committing overshadows the fact that he's even looking into this intimate moment. And it definitely, because in this point of the film, this is like the head of the conflict. This is when everything surfaces to the top, because up until this point, we see this love blossoming very, very slowly, very authentically. And we did have conflicts all throughout the film, but this is the number one point that they can't turn back from, because they have evidence, they have proof. Now this is leading up to a very, very impactful scene. But it also leads to like the short deterioration of their relationship.
Yeah, and I love that most of the movies, whenever these women talk with the men, like you said, you mentioned it earlier, the juxtaposition of talking with their significant others or soon-to-be ex-significant others, it's always very tense, it's argumentative, it always ends in yelling. In some cases, she even shoves, Carol shoves Harge down because he gets drunk. And he's grabbing her, and she, of course, is just like, get away from me and shit. And you also, her house, by the way, it's in New Jersey. It's a pretty awesome house. Like, it's huge. And it's really sad that it happened really in front of the daughter. And they were like, they were just like, oh, I thought you would be in Florida or something. And he's just like, no, I'm here. And he goes to Abby's, and he's just like, where the fuck is she? Clearly, he's very, very sexist, very confrontational throughout the entire movie. And then whenever Rooney Mara and Kate Blanchett are together, it's literally just them getting to know each other through lines of dialogue. Like, in the hotel, they're just like, oh, I've never spent New Year's Eve with Harge because he was always on business, and it's implied that he's very successful. And Rooney Mara is just like, yeah, no, I never did anything like that either. Mostly probably because she's shy. And I guess that was their first New Year's kiss as well. And yeah, you could, just a funny thought, you could retitle this movie A Christmas Carol and it would still work. Because there are spirits in a sense. Yes, I got the Sabrina Yo. I was waiting for that.
But I love that you mentioned. Earlier about the way that her house looks in the film, because it is genuinely so beautiful. Everyone that did the set design and the wardrobe, it kind of goes to show what we talked about earlier, how this is definitely very much so lived in. Such an authentic portrayal of the 50s, as three people who have not lived in this time period were able to be immersed with it and get a sense of the culture and get a sense of how everybody interacts with each other during this time. Obviously, pre-social media, pre-cell phones, that's why you're able to keep a secret like this hidden a little bit easier rather than in this day and age. It'd be much easier for somebody to stumble upon you in a like in a public place or whatever, especially something like New York City, and be like, oh, these people keep going out on dates. Like, it's much easier to catch people in that way. But also the wardrobe team, that's something I have to freaking mention at this point. The wardrobe and styling, everybody that worked on that did such an amazing job. Carol and Therese, they have such distinct styles that meld together and complement each other so beautifully. But like, if you laid the two outfits next to each other and didn't have the person wearing them, I would know exactly which one is each person's, because it's signature, it's classic, it's everything that we know of being in a city in the 1950s. And that's something I really, really admire about this film as well.
Yeah, I could totally see you just like wearing these outfits just like now, total hipster. And I want to go back to the scene where Carol pulls the gun on the guy and just how he's just getting ready, so casual about everything, like he's done this before. She points the gun at him, doesn't even faze him. He's just like, look, I'm just doing my job, I don't care. Like, he doesn't even get like scared. He's just, he knows he's in control. And we also see that the gun isn't loaded. Which, yeah, that's one of the plot holes. I'm just like, how did Carol not know that the gun was not loaded? It's hers. And yes, their relationship unfortunately starts to deteriorate. And man, just made me sad. But then we also see the second time that Rooney Mara cries, because she cried the first time after she went to Carol's house. On the train ride, great acting, by the way, from Rooney Mara. It's not always easy to portray crying in movies. It can come across as very campy or just over the top, and it can be funny. But in this case, it's just heartbreaking. And then, like, she's in the car with Carol, and she's just like, hey, everything's going to be okay. And just holds her tenderly, and you feel like these two have just established such a loving, real connection. And it's great seeing that stuff, because you don't get too much of that from women, like two gay women or anything like that.
100%. What about you, buddy? I love that you mentioned that.
Yeah, I totally, especially in that moment, I realized that thing that Therese says, was like, I should have said no. I always say yes to everything. I'm selfish. And Carol immediately stops and says, I took what you gave willingly. And it's a really good moment, because Therese feels guilty because Carol's going to lose her daughter. But immediately Carol's like, no. I love you. And it's not your fault. I really love that moment as well. And you, Sabrina?
Yeah, because regardless, whether it is Therese in this situation or whatever, if Carol's just being herself, if she falls in love with any other woman, regardless, this is always going to be the situation. So it has nothing to do with Therese. And I love that even though she just went through such a sudden, unexpected, heartbreaking moment in terms of finding out that she was recorded and things like that, and she's going to lose custody of her daughter most likely at this point, she still puts no blame on anything, because like I said, she is unapologetically herself, and she's more judgmental of the people who are trying to judge her for something that she's not hurting anybody. She's not doing anything by being in this relationship. The only thing is Kyle Chandler's character is just so deeply upset at the fact that he can't have her and he can't have what he wants especially at this time, the whole like American dream, white picket fence, nuclear family. It's like on paper, if you look at the three of them, even when they're dancing at the party together, Carol and Harge, they look like perfect. He's very clearly successful. They have a beautiful daughter that they created together, and Carol's absolutely stunning. But she's also so much more than that, and she has a lot more to provide to the world. And like I kind of mentioned earlier, at this time, women were just second-class citizens. Like, if you're in a situation like this, you are 100% screwed, because like I said, you couldn't even open a bank account until the 1970s. Women could not do that for themselves. They needed their husband to sign for them to open a bank account. They couldn't just do it on their own. So there's so many different, and there's a lot of stuff like that. That's like, looking back at history is completely disgusting. But at this time, there is so much in the world that she wouldn't be able to do without having a husband by her side, unfortunately. So as all of this is crumbling down, I just love the weight of the intimacy, where it's like, it's not on either of them. It's on the way the world kind of sees them.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you said she can't really do anything without a husband. That leads me to believe that she really only married her husband out of convenience, not out of love, and did her duties as a wife because that was what was expected of her, and she didn't really have a choice in that matter. And then, yeah, they spend another night together and make love yet again. Not as hot this time, but it still gets the job done. And then Abby comes to pick up Therese, and she just gives her this disapproving look, almost kind of like that she was jealous, because it was established that Carol and Abby had a thing before. And Therese, she goes to a diner, doesn't eat any food, and she just sits and smokes. Really the first time we've seen her smoke in the movie. We see Carol smoke all throughout the movie, but now it's just like different, and we see how lonely she is. And while they're driving, Therese just goes, look, I know you hate me, but Abby's just like, I don't hate you. I literally drove halfway across the country to bring you back to New York for my friend. You're fine. But then she explains that they've known each other since they were 10. And that they did a thing when they were teenagers. They were experimenting when they were teenagers. But they decided to stay friends, and now it's platonic. And really, Abby is a crutch for Carol to go on, and is a big support system for her. Not just for her independence, but just also just somebody to talk to. Really, because I just thought of this. The house is also representative of Carol's character, where it's perfect on the outside. It's the nuclear family, right? But on the inside, that's not the case. It's just all a big like peacocking act, where it's actually a very dysfunctional, very broken just place, and it sucks. And then we see that some time has passed, and they're back in New York, and she's developing the photos that she took of Carol, because she took photos of Carol throughout the trip just for her portfolio, and because she just really likes being a photographer. Jimmy Olsen, eat your heart out. And just
the amount of DC references that you have made throughout talking about, how do you manage to reference DC when talking about Carol so many times? But I really do love that you mentioned the dynamic between
better DC than puns.
Well, I like a good healthy mixture of both. I hesitantly like a good mixture of both, but the relationship between Abby and Carol is, especially like the way I grew up and, you know, like not fully understanding all the ideas of like sexuality yet. People take so much time to learn about themselves. Some people learn about themselves when they're 30. There's a transition all throughout life, and something can spark it, whether it's meeting somebody and you fall in love with them and you didn't know that you were capable of something like this, whatever it may be. But Abby and Carol knew about themselves through their own relationship together, and they were able to find that peace. And I feel like that's why Abby is the perfect friend and companion to Carol, because she truly, truly understands her, and she understands everything that she's going through throughout this entire film. Because especially in this era, as we said, like it's extremely, extremely difficult, and you don't talk about it and you don't show yourself out the way that you would necessarily nowadays. And it's something to be ashamed of rather than let it be open and let it be a part of yourself. So I really, really like the relationship. And I love that moment with Abby and Therese, because it's both of her, because at this time, Therese is a past partner. So it's both of their, both of her past partners interacting and learning more about each other and their experiences with Carol. And almost throughout this entire film, and I do think that's why the film and the book was republished with the title Carol, is because she's this being throughout most of this film. She walks into a room and everybody's eyes are on her. She's so confident in herself. The way that she speaks, the way that she orders drinks and talks to every single person in her life, it seems so subtle and easy and flawless just all the time. And then as we go forward in this film, you know, we get even more of the vulnerability. And it's from the conflict that we kind of mentioned earlier where everything crumbles. But also, yeah, having to let go of Therese, who is somebody she very clearly loved quickly and wanted to have a life with at this point.
Yeah, especially as you see that that Abby left has a letter from Carol to Therese, says it's not your fault. We would have got caught either way. I know that you're young and you want a resolution. You will understand one day. And imagine me greeting you with our hands watching a perpetual sunrise. Until then, we cannot see each other. I release you. As we see that, as Billy said, we see Therese developing her photos, amazing photos of Carol. As also, Therese is trying to call Carol. Carol hangs up and she just says, I miss you. And then we see the hearing divorce contest that Carol's lawyer says, like, well, her psychiatrist is saying that she's doing fine. She has progressed a lot. And we want custody for both of them. But then immediately Carol, he sees how hard she's, so angry. He's like, you know what? I know that we're never going to change. I know that we don't like each other anymore. There's no passion between us, but we did something that we both love, our daughter. And I want her to be happy. And I know that she will have a better life with you. I'm like, just let me visit her. And that's it. Please think about it. And she leaves the room.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the best scene in the movie, just because mm-hmm. it is. There's so many emotions in that in this scene, because you know it's just been building up to the court mm-hmm. hearing. It's like the Kramer versus Kramer scene, like towards, like when Dustin Hoffman comes on the stand, and you want to hear, like you saw multiple scenes of Carol and her lawyer, who she knew like prior to this, and he's just like, I don't know, they're pretty serious about this. And once again, being a lawyer, he's trying to find a way, like a loophole to make it go out and win the case. But then Carol is just like, look, I'm tired of hiding who I am. I am who I am. And the fact that she was able to walk out of that office is nothing short of a miracle. But she just goes, like she looks at Harge, Kyle Chandler, throughout the entire time she's talking. And then she's just like, look, I just want regular visits. I don't care if they're supervised. I just want to see my daughter. And then that's it. I'm done negotiating. And she lays down the line. She's just like, these are my terms, and I don't want this to go on any further. Because they tried. But you can't change who you are, ultimately. Like, the core of yourself, you can't. She said, basically goes, I can't change who I am no matter how much I want to, just as much as you can't change. And let's just try to find a compromise. And yeah.
Well, it's that much more impactful because even like just prior to this moment, which this was the moment that I was talking about that's not in the book and it is in the film, and it works so well and adds so much depth and layers and dignity to Carol in this situation, because she was talking and obviously, you know, she's seeing therapists, she's seeing all this because, like I said, it's like this used to be classified as like a mental health disorder, and it used to be viewed as this taboo subject, and people were not comfortable speaking about it openly the way that it's a little bit easier to now. So in this situation, she is basically told to like lie, say that she's recovered. They literally use the word recovered, and not have these types of thoughts and different things like that all the time. So she's able to lay down the line. And like you said, Billy, saying like, this is who I am and I can't change it and I'm not going to. And I would love to see my daughter. I love my daughter. She has the most out of between like her and Harge. It just shows that she cares about her daughter, because Harge is constantly keeping the daughter away from Carol because he wants Carol to be this submissive wife. So he's using the daughter as leverage, but Carol actually loves, and he probably loves her as well, but we don't get to see those moments in the film that way, because he's constantly just being like, oh, I won't give you visitation to this. But Carol's constantly saying like, we created this beautiful thing. Both of us together created her. And this is going to be probably the best thing we ever have in our entire lives. And there's no reason to keep that from each other, because we both created her. We both share her. She's our person. And like, just in those few like lines, just in this one scene, there's just so much emotional weight and depth. And you see it in Harge's face. You see the realization at this point where it's like, she doesn't love me. I can't use this situation as a way for her. I can't use my daughter as leverage, basically. I can't use her as like, you can't see your daughter if you're not with me. If I can't have you, nobody can. And I'm going to make sure I ruin your life, which is exactly what he was doing throughout this entire film. So she's able to walk out with her dignity, with her head held high, being the strong, amazing woman that she is, tackling something that is so damn difficult in the 1950s, being a lesbian woman or a queer woman, and fighting for her rights in this child custody situation, fighting for the rights that women should have, and not to be submissive to partners just because you think you're going to most likely lose. And she had the privilege to be able to do that though as well, because obviously back at this time, some people couldn't. But it's very, very impactful. And it's so important to see something like this, because a lot of the times when we look back at queer cinema and things like that, unfortunately, a lot of it, for good reason, but like a lot of it focuses on tragedy and heartbreak. So if the film ended with her losing her daughter and that being it, it would be so less uplifting than the moment that we have with this, where she may lose her daughter, but she's not going to give up pieces of herself and change herself and go to therapy and say that she's recovered from being queer, just in order to be able to live the life that she wants to live.
That was beautiful. And every single word that you said was true. And I had a joke about every time Harge would go into like a situation, I kept thinking that he would just go, clear minds, full hearts, can't lose. Every single time. If you've watched Friday Night Lights, you know what I'm talking about. I know that negates that very serious tone, but no, you are 100% right. And then I'm going to let Raul describe the last two scenes in the movie. Or, yeah, really the last two scenes, because I feel like I've been talking way too much. And I got to give it up for... I gotta give it up to you, buddy. So you wanna wrap this up, then we can do the plugs and
yes,
all that?
And then we see Therese. She's just developing her photos, and we see her that she's kind of like this new guy was like, hey, you should do a portfolio, and then she's like, I'm still thinking about it, and then she's like working, and then she gets an invitation from Carol, hey, you wanna meet up at this place? It's okay, you don't wanna come. But then we see Therese showing up, and they catch up. That they like she Carol says that she can visit Rudy, and also as they catch up, and like, cause I'm already have an apartment, I have a job, and Carol asks Therese to move in with her. Like she just wants to continue to be with Therese, but then all of a sudden a friend from Therese comes and interrupts, hey, are you going to come to the party of the company? And then everybody wants to see you. And immediately Carlos was like, without saying anything, there he was like, you have a life and I don't want to change it. And she Carlos was like, oh no, I'm going to leave you too. And even like the guy was like, you can come, Nosa, as well. No, I'm okay. And then she walks by. As we see that Therese is like, she couldn't say goodbye to Carol. And then we see her in the car getting to the party. And then she's still like thinking about Carol. And even we see this random woman even trying to kind of like talk to her. Maybe it's kind of like implied that maybe that woman was also interested in Therese. But then also Therese walks out of the party, goes to that club that Carol said was going to be there at 9 p.m. She walks in, and I realized the slow way that we see her walking in, and we see only the camera. I was like, is she going to talk to Carol? I thought that the final shot of the movie was going to be her not seeing Carol, but then we see that Carol is also seeing her. But then I was like, Carol's not going to respond. Therese is going to walk away. But no, we see Carol from afar looking at her and smiling, and that's the end. Like, it's saying that they both stay together, and it's a really good ending, especially how Sabrina said it, that a lot of queer cinema is about tragedy. Like, one of them has to die, or they're never going to be together, etc. At least in this movie, in this film, it was a really good ending.
Yeah, it's in this ambiguous, implied, uplifting ending. Obviously, we don't know what happens going forward, but at least we're leaving them on this beautiful, uplifting note. And everything from you just described from the last like two scenes, like Therese has this newfound confidence, and that's 100% due to her relationship with Carol. Like in her work life, the way she was so timid and shy working at the department store, not just with Carol, but everybody, the way she had conversations with people, and she wasn't able to speak up for herself in every single conversation. Now she's killing it. She's working at the Times, doing photography. She's doing everything she wanted to do. And Carol definitely instilled kind of that confidence in you, because everybody that we meet within our lives touches us in a different way. And that's what their relationship did for her. So when they first have the meeting, it is definitely interesting to see the parallel from their first like lunch date versus this new meeting after breaking up for that period of time, and how Carol offers to live with her and to live in an apartment and to be themselves. And Therese doesn't know what to do at this point, because she seems pretty content with the way her life is. And that was a huge heartbreak, but you know, like every single cloud has a silver lining, and she was able to accomplish so much in this time period. And then, yes, when she goes to the party, because she is carrying herself in this confident way, we do see another woman is looking at her and clearly flirting with her, saying that her friend was talking her up, saying all these wonderful things about her and clearly showing interest. But of course, something that we rarely get to see, but something that is awesome to see, she does go back and see Carol. And like in my mind, I do feel like they're like twin flame soulmates. They complement each other so beautifully, whether it comes out from like Carol bringing out Therese's kind of drive, ambition, and motivation to really succeed and to unapologetically be herself the way Carol is. There really is a beauty in their relationship and with the way the film ends.
Yeah, I think you pretty much summed up my thoughts as well, and thank you for that, Sabrina. And now we get to do the rating and then we do the plugs and everything, but before we do, I just wanted to say thank you once again for your time, and I know you're a very, very busy woman, and the fact that you agreed to do this, it really means a lot, and I just wanted to say thank you, because you two are two of my favorite people in this world, and to talk about excellent cinema with you at any time is a honor and privilege on my part. And yeah, you got anything else to say, buddy?
Oh, thank you, Billy. But yeah, like I was really surprised by this film. I really enjoyed it. It's a really great drama, especially the ending. As I said, I was expecting a tragedy. I thought that maybe even though, like, what if Carol gets killed by Harsh, or maybe she kills herself or something? Because, like you said, it's about expecting about queer cinema. Like, one of them has to die. But I was like, oh, it's a really good ending. And also, like, this film is really great. Like, I would give it a 9 out of 10. Like, it needed to be a little more faster, but I think it's understandable why it's a slow pace. But I love the chemistry between Rooney Mara and Cate Blanchett, especially Cate Blanchett. For me, she's the better actress in the film. And you, Sabrina?
I would rate this a 10 out of 10. I think this is an amazing example of adapting a book to the screen, taking away certain things that aren't going to work. Because that's why video game movies or some books don't translate well to the screen, is because when they stay 100% faithful to the adaptation, it's just not going to work because it's a completely different format and a different art medium. And this is actually known as one of the most faithful adaptations of the author, which is really interesting because it's not 100% faithful, but it encapsulates the same feelings. That's what it is when you're adapting something. It's staying faithful to everything the author or creator or whatever intended. So I would give this a 10 out of 10 for those reasons, plus the wardrobe, the costuming, the set design, the score, the performances, of course. I think they're both absolutely incredible. And yeah, it's just those, for me, I am a sucker for a slow burn romance. I don't know why. So I do know like the 2-hour runtime for some people might be a little bit long. I don't know why it breezes by for me because of the electricity on screen. And yeah, love slow burn romances.
Nice. And I'm going to rate it like I did Love, Simon, a 9 out of 10. I will also agree with those reasons that you named, the score, the set design, the costumes, the acting, especially the acting. And I just realized
the directing
now, thanks
from
to
Todd
Love,
Haynes,
Simon,
too.
Oh my gosh, yes, great directing.
Yeah.
This is also the second week in a row we have a character named Abby. I just realized that. And on that random note, where can they? I want to thank Sabrina for coming onto the podcast. She is welcome back anytime. And where can they find you on the socials? You got anything to plug? Any projects?
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for having me on to talk about Carol. And anyone listening, you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sabrina X Monica, also on Twitter at Sabrina on Film, and patreon.com/Sabrina on Film. I have a film club. Billy's a part of it. We all hang out together, talk on Zoom, recommend films to each other. We have different themes every single week or every other week. And I also do streams on there. And also the First Cut YouTube channel, The Meaning of Podcast, the Geeks of Color website. I have a lot of really exciting stuff coming up, some interviews and some reviews for some movies. So definitely check that out if you're interested.
Wow, you're a really busy woman. That's a lot. That's pretty damn cool. And also, as always, you can find me at RobertRDC on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and on TikTok at RobertRDC. And you, Billy?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at MasterPuns196. Every word starts with a capital letter. You can also follow me on Instagram at BillyBatsonsLightning. Nothing is capitalized. And once you can also follow our podcast Twitter at SYNSPod. And you can give us a 5-star review, unless you're that one asshole that gave us the 1-star for some reason. We don't know who you are, but we will always mention you. And yeah, we're still holding on. Let go. I had to do that for Raul. And you can follow us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Anchor, Spotify, wherever podcasts are listened to. And as always,
see you next summer. Dun, 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 dun.